Okay. So the mission of the Jewish Women's Renaissance Project is to really activate Jewish women to make a real change in the Jewish people, right? We heard Rabbi Edelstein speaking this morning. It seems like I almost said yesterday because it feels like it was yesterday, right? But we heard Rabbi Edelstein talking about the people that donors, that funders want to see big change. And here is an opportunity that we can all join together. You know, this year there are 37 different organizations that are participating in the missions this year. Right, sending 900 women, right? It's amazing. It's not any one organization, right? It's all of these organizations that are joining together. We see that we can really make the change. These trips take women to Israel on nine-day missions. We take them up to Tveria, and we dance with them at the restaurant decks on the Kinneret, and we take them to Sfat, and we take them rafting on the Jordan River. And we take them to Masada and to the Dead Sea. And we have them do chesed projects. And we take them to Jerusalem and we introduce them. We learn with them. And we take them to the Kotel. And we give them a beautiful Shabbos experience with these women that have never experienced a whole Shabbos in their lives. Right? Are actually experiencing a whole Shabbos and they're loving it. People often ask, you know, don't they? You know, aren't some of the women nervous about Shabbos? You know, it's never happened. It's not happened because they're on such a high from being there that the Shabbos experience is so full. Okay, thank you for the lights. Okay, how does this work?
This direction.
Do I have to say magic words? What do we have to say here? Yeah? What? Are we just talking over here? There we go. Okay. This is in 2010. Let's see if we get back to 2009. In 2010, we brought 600 women from 19 cities and 6 countries. Thank you. That's better. Okay, is that better? Everyone hear me? Okay. In 2009, we actually brought 300 women from 6 cities and 3 countries. As I told you before, this year we are bringing 900 women. There's actually a Spanish-speaking mission in Israel right now as we speak that's finishing up on Tuesday. There's another one the end of May. There's 2 in July. There's 1 in October and 1 in November. Right, 900 women. Right, the women come with local outreach organizations, including the Jewish Experience, an Aish in Denver, Data in Dallas, the Seattle Kollel, the Atlanta Scholars Kollel, JFX and Aish in Cleveland, Aish here in Detroit, the Chicago Torah Network, the Westmount Shul, Forest Hill Jewish Center, the Thornwald Shul, and Aish in Toronto, and many, many, many more. Quite a few of our 2011 organizations actually heard about the missions, right, from the WIC conference just last year, and now they're bringing groups, right? They came as local groups, right? Because you bring your women, and they return as a community. You know what we hear from the women that are running these organizations? We hear, I don't have enough time to teach the classes that they want me to teach, to do the follow-up. Right? The issue for them is not trying to get people to their programs, it's how to provide enough follow-up for these women that are so inspired. What an amazing problem to have. Okay. Let's see. There we go. This was 2009. Okay. There we go. This is 2011. 37 organizations, right? Is that amazing? 37. Imagine 37 organizations working together, right? That's what's going on. Okay, the results. On average, 55% of the women that have come on these missions have made a new learning commitment. Wait, we survey the women before they go, and we send them surveys when they get back, and we survey them every year after that, so that we can get an idea for how this is affecting them. 48% are taking on new mitzvot, as high as 78% with some of the women. 65% are recruiting friends and family, right, to come on future missions. right? One woman actually called off her divorce. Many others have pulled their kids from public schools and have put them in Jewish schools. The women of Atlanta were so inspired, they're fundraising to build a women's center. The women of Minneapolis are organizing a yearly fundraising drive to support their Minneapolis going on the JWR trips. My mission went from D.C. to we visited an Ethiopian teen center that our Washington Federation funded. So they raised between $2,000 and $3,000 to run a porn project at that teen center. Right, themselves, because they were so inspired. Right, they're actually talking about a fundraiser now so that they can raise money to pay it forward so for more women to come on our missions in future years. Right, really, really amazing. Okay, this is the highest impact activity I've witnessed in 25 years. Right, this has been the most exciting, educational, and emotional time of my life. To our sponsors, your charitable giving has changed the course of my Jewish family forever. When you inspire a woman, you inspire a family, right? We actually have taken men's missions because the women have come back and told their husbands, and the husbands have been so excited, right, that they've wanted to go and have a little bit of the experience that their wives have had, right? When you inspire enough families, you inspire a community, right? You want to make a difference in your community. You take them as a group, and they come back, inspired. Okay? Right. Okay, so this is the $64,000 question. Why should you do this in your city? Right? 100 is the number of women that you could have working for you in 3 years if you start taking women on this trip. And 0 is the amount that you would have if you don't. Because these women, I'm telling you, these women come back inspired. They want to fundraise. They want to organize. Right? I actually have a Shabbat dinner for all my mission women that have come over the last couple years. Right? I have my women making the phone calls. I have a committee of women making the phone calls. I'm not there making the phone calls. Right? Because they are inspired, and they want to make a difference. Our biggest problem, right, is having enough staff. Right? Having enough money, we don't have enough money, so we don't have enough staff. So here you have like an army of women that want to help you make a difference, right? Really amazing. Okay, so this is what we provide, okay? This is what we provide. We give you the PR materials. You see the flyer, I have some copies of it over there. We will put your information on the flyer. We'll put your logo on the flyer, right? The name of your city. You choose dates. This year we're running 6 missions, right? And sometime in the fall we'll decide on what's going to be happening for 2012, right? We are hoping in 2012 to send 1,200 women, right? That's our goal for 2012. Very easy application process. We handle that for you. It's online. Once the application comes in, it gets emailed straight. You will get access to the database, and you get access to all the women that apply from your city. We give you interview questions to help you focus and select the right candidates, right? 100% of them cannot be Shomer Shabbos. 90% need to have kids at home. They need to be physically and emotionally healthy, right? And they have to live within an easy drive of your outreach organization, because this is not just a fun, inspiring 9 days in Israel. Right, this is about the follow-up that happens when you get back, because that's how we take this inspiring experience and we make it something that lasts. We're giving you a $2,000 subsidy per woman, right? And Lori Klotnick is raising all that money. Okay, so what do we ask? What do we ask of you, right? So the women, your women, have to pay their airfare. They pay their airline ticket. They get 9 days in Israel free, right? So what do you have to do? You have to raise $200 per woman, right? That's what you have to do. You have to complete the interview forms online, right, that you interviewed them, right? We ask you a few questions about each of the women, just a few. We're actually streamlining it more every year, so we might try to make it as easy for you as possible. You select the participants. You decide who's going to go. You organize pre-trip gatherings, and you provide post-trip follow-up, okay? We have a website that we're constantly working on. We're creating an online community. The trip is only the beginning. We're developing an innovative and interactive website to keep the women connected, inspired, learning, sharing, and growing. Right? An online community of values and friendship. Okay? That was in 2009. That was in 2011. In 2010, we brought 600 women from 18 cities in 6 countries, and we were sold out. This year, we're bringing 900 women on 6 trips, and we're sold out. Right? Even here, people were asking me, they say, wanted more spaces, and we don't have them. So start planning for 2012 now. Right? We're going to bring 1,200 women, but that's thinking small, because ultimately, we want to bring tens of thousands of women. We see that bringing women to Israel makes a difference. They come back and they make commitments that we haven't seen just by having them learn in our programs here, right? It really affects them. With your follow-up and this like amazing experience, right, you can really change your community. So we have contact information, and we believe if we affect enough women together with the help of the Almighty, right, we can really change the direction of Klal Yisrael, right? Talmud says, in the merit of the righteous women, we were redeemed from Egypt. In their merit, the ultimate redemption will come. So, thank you very much. If you have questions, I know there's a few presentations, not a lot. So, I am going to be here for the rest of the conference. If you have questions, we have flyers for you. And I just want to mention one other thing very quickly. Barry Feld from Cleveland really wanted to be here and was not able to. I'm just going to do 1 minute on this. So, Barry brought women on the missions for the last few years, and from women in her community were saying, this isn't fair. You guys get to have this experience and we don't. So Barry took it upon herself to organize a mission that's called the Chizuk Mission, and it's run for the last 2 years, where this mission is for from women to be inspired. And Lori leads the trip as well, and you get all of her energy and her inspiration. The classes are specifically designed for from women. Unfortunately, it's not subsidized because it's hard to get funders to subsidize a group of from women to go to Israel. But it's an amazing trip, and I have flyers here from Barry, and so she's organizing it again this year. And it really is an amazing experience.
Is it for men and women this year?
No, not that I know of. But we can be in touch with Barry. And the thing about sending from women from your city, you're thinking, I'm in Kiruv. Like it's not really within my purview to work within the from community. You got to be mechazik them too, and you inspire them, and they're going to help you. They're going to have your women for Shabbos. They're going to be involved. You know, a lot of these women can learn one-on-one with women and be involved with you, and maybe help you fundraise to bring even bigger groups of women on the missions in coming years. So it's definitely worth it. Okay?
Thank you very much, Ruth. Okay, Cyril, you want to come and I'll help you pass those things out. I'll pass it out. You guys can start.
Did that come off?
Yes. There you go.
Okay. Hi, everybody. I wanted to talk to you really super briefly about something that we started at last year's WIC conference. Basically, everyone was going around the room. It was really late at night. I don't know if any of you remember. And everyone was sharing their, like, amazing ideas, and it was really inspiring. And I was thinking maybe we could create something, some kind of network, that we can all share these ideas kind of whenever we wanted. So we started the WIC Yahoo group. I don't know how many of you are familiar with Yahoo groups. I know, it's, like, late to be talking about this kind of computer stuff, but I tried to make it really clear. I don't know, we'll see. And basically what it is that when you join the group, you can email out to everyone at one time, and you receive emails from everyone at one time.
Just put it right next to your mouth.
Right next to my mouth. Okay. Also, you could visit the site page of the group, and you can search through all the old messages that went out and see if your question has been answered, or just, I guess they're all kind of saved under this page. So if you're interested in joining, there are 3 ways to join the group. If you look, I don't know if everyone has this thing already. So if you have a Yahoo account, meaning if you currently use Yahoo, like, I don't know if you're something at yahoo.com, you can request to join yourself at the website that's listed here. The second way is to send a blank email from any email account to womeninkirov/subscribe@yahoogroups.com. And the third way is, if you just can't figure it out, just email me and I'll add you directly, which is what a lot of people do, which is fine. Just write your name and your cure of affiliation, because it's really limited to just women. I have had requests from men to join. Like, I guess, I don't know. But yeah, so just for women and just for women involved in cure. So just to put both of those pieces of information on that. And to use the WIC Yahoo group is super easy. There are currently 179 members in the group, like all over the world. There's Campus Cure, I don't know, Revitans. Like, it's really a diverse, amazing group, but it's not used so frequently, I guess, because either people are very shy or they don't know how to use it. So. Thank you. I actually benefited from it a lot. Like, I got some Hanukkah programs from it. I don't know, like, it was good. So to post a message is so easy. You simply write an email from any account. If you have Gmail, Hotmail, anything, you write your email to women, like, it's right here, under posting a message, that's an underscore. It's like a shift hyphen, becomes an underscore. womenincure@yahoogroups.com, and it goes out to everybody. Like, you've emailed effectively 200 people. Like, if you're looking for an idea, I don't know, recently someone was looking for a college teacher in New York. I don't know if they found one. I don't know if that was you who answered.
No, it wasn't me who asked, but I called them up to message with three numbers.
Right. Like, it's really kind of a good resource. To reply to a message, you can either reply to the person, like, underneath each message. It says reply to all or reply to sender. So if you think that your response is going to be beneficial to the whole group, then you can click reply to all. Or you could just reply to the person personally. And then to view past messages, you go to this website here, groups.yahoo.com. It's, like, all listed here. And if you don't have a Yahoo ID, you won't be able to get in. So I created, like, an anonymous ID that's linked to the group, and it's kirivlady@ymail.com. And her password is 123456. So you don't need a Yahoo account. You could just use this ID. And for all the people that are shy, it's a great way to post anonymously. Like, if you have a question that you don't want everyone knowing that you asked, you could go into this account and then send. No, a lot of it's like a good way to post something if you're shy or respond or whatever. So currently, whoever joins the group gets put on what's called the Daily Digest, because a lot of people are, I don't want 100 emails from 179 people. So basically what it is that it takes all the messages from that day and sends it out in one email. So you're going to get one email from Women in Kiro, and it's going to have, you'll see, like, blue subject titles. And that list, so all you have to do really is just read the subject titles of the emails. If nothing interests you, delete it. If something interests you, you could scroll down and read what the person wrote. So really, it's very little time, and it's just a nice, simple way to stay connected. So, yeah, that's how you subscribe. And if you want to unsubscribe at any time, there's a way to do that too, but then anyone had a commitment issue. So, yeah, if anyone has any questions whatsoever, they can feel free to ask. I'm around.
Cora? Oh, it's not working so well.
Hi. So I felt like at a conference like this, it might be a good idea. I'm sure none of you need this. But to put together a list of, like, the top five things not to say to your female students / guests, as a Abolish Chuva myself and a former feminist, or now I'm a neo-feminist, whatever you want to call it, so I've had some things said to me over the years that were very off-putting. And Baruch Hashem, I was very committed to my Jewish journey, and so I kept on keeping on, and it didn't affect me. But I thought it was worth just putting this together. So it's like five or six things. I'll just go through them really quickly. And if you guys have questions or comments, you can feel free to, like, add to my list or whatever if you've had horror stories. So number one, Hillary Clinton and those feminists are the cause of all the moral decline in America. Okay, so I unfortunately was at a family in a very religious neighborhood in Israel. In my, like, the beginning stage, I think it was, like, maybe my early stages at Neve. I was, like, not fully committed yet. And the father, you know, basically got up and made this whole diatribe about how feminists were, like, the cause of all evil in the world. And, you know, as a guest at someone's home, you can't, like, get up and be like, you know, and start arguing with the husband of the house. It's, like, inappropriate. So I felt, like, very much like my hands were tied and I couldn't answer him, and but I felt really angry, and I left the table, like, really upset. And, you know, Baruch Hashem, obviously I'm still here. But the point is that, you know, for someone who maybe wasn't as committed or wasn't as far along in their journey, this could have really been, like, the experience that turned them off, God forbid, forever. So I generally tell people, like, men and women, just don't even touch politics. First of all, you're never going to convince someone. Have you ever convinced someone to change their political affiliation? Like, never, okay? My father-in-law is still working on my father. He's like, Obama, really? Okay, so it's not going to work. So number one, it's useless. And number two, you risk offending the people at your table or your students for no good reason. So I really advise, do not ever talk politics at your Shabbos table or with your students. It's just not worth it. Talk Torah. That's what we're here to do, right? Okay. Number two, the way young women dress today in the secular world is disgusting. They have such low self-esteem. They need men to gawk at them to feel good about themselves. Okay, so I've heard variations of this from people, from well-meaning people, who either don't know what? Can I repeat that? Sure. You want to write it down for later? The way young women dress today in the secular world is disgusting. They have such low self-esteem. They need men to gawk at them to feel good about themselves. So while this may be true, okay, girls who grew up in our society today usually don't think consciously, I'm dressing this way to objectify myself and get validation. Like, that's not what they're thinking. I know, because I dress that way. I wasn't thinking that. I was thinking, this is a cute outfit, you know? So they're brainwashed, basically, by the fashion industry to dress a certain way because they think it looks cute and because, basically, our entire American culture is based on if you've got it, flaunt it. Whether it's money, your body, you worked out at the gym, you need to show everyone. It's funny, because I married a Russian, and, like, whatever, his family, his parents are basically from, but the grandparents are not. And when we were first married, his, you know, babushka, right, his Russian grandmother, said to him, you know, and I was from before I met my husband, but she said to him, I don't know what's wrong with you. You're so sexist. You're making her wear this thing on her head. She has such gorgeous legs, and you make her wear long skirts. I don't know what's wrong with you. And I'm sitting there like, I do this to myself. It was very funny. Anyway, she was very upset about it. You know, Russians, like, you got to, you know, show it out there. And the older you are, the more you show. Okay, so I also know just that, you know, it's not necessarily an issue of, like, bedafka, I'm trying to dress this way. I have a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old girl. I literally cannot find clothes in the regular stores that do not look like mini Britney Spears. It's like, Britney, shrunk, you know, on this, like, 8-year-old, but it's so sick. I can't find anything, and I don't want to shop in the frummy stores. What?
You're not allowed to say it's so sick.
Yeah, I mean, welcome audience here, right. But it's not as if even, you know, some girls, like, go shopping, and they would want to wear something a little bit more dignified, but nothing's in the stores. It's really, really problematic. So a better tactic is to talk honestly, without preaching, about your own experience, especially if you're Baal Teshuva, about when you used to dress differently, and, you know, like Rabbi Edelstein, I think, was talking, or no, Rabbi Gottlieb, of sharing your experience. I used to dress this way, now I dress this way, and this is what it brought to me in my own life. If you always dress sneeze, it's probably better not to mention anything, as you will not be relatable to them. But you could mention that in contrast to Islam, Judaism does not negate a woman's femininity or individuality, right? We don't cover here, and you can give, like, a little schmooze about that. The motto that I use, which I believe I stole from Gail Madison, is pretty, not provocative, attractive, not attracting. So you're getting across to them that it's really, it's important. You can't be a Kiddush Hashem, you can't be a light into the nations if you're schleppy, shrumpy, dumpy, frumpy, right? You know, our goal is to be attractive and put together and dignified. Think, you know, from Audrey Hepburn, you know, like, just classy, right, without being, you know, schlumpy or provocative. Okay, number three, and this happened to me. Sweetheart, I'm going to give you a shawl to wear over that really revealing top you're wearing. Okay. This was at a Shabbos meal. I was already... Thank you. I feel so close to you. Okay, so this was on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Okay, so these are not people in a secluded neighborhood, right? And I was already at the meal, so I can't change, you know? I felt so humiliated, so, like, disgusting. I was so angry. And by the way, I think this was after I'd already been to Nevada. So I was already like from, right, basically, but I was so turned off by this experience. So basically my advice is, if you're going to be upset by girls who don't dress according to Jewish law yet, it's possible you shouldn't be involved in Kiruv. Okay? By making comments once the girl is already at your house for Shabbos, you risk deeply offending her and turning her off from Judaism. Depending on the situation, sometimes you could be proactive. You know, like when we have Shabbatons at our home in Passaic, we usually, I mean, our girls generally know because they're like Sephardi, so they kind of know, like, you know, some semblance of, like, wear a skirt or whatever. But for other groups, you know, for NYU, like, Rabbi Eisenman asked me to, like, put together this little sneeze blurb that he can, you know, like, a fun, relatable way to just send out an email to them and be like, you know, don't wear any low-cut tops. Because that's basically, when you're sitting at a Shabbos meal, right, here I am, it doesn't matter if I'm wearing pants or a short skirt. All that matters is here. And that's what, like, your sons and your husbands are seeing at the table. So just focus on the cleavage. That's like basically, you know, that's the bottom line. So I sent out something that basically was, I said, you know, like, if you can be, you're coming into a religious community, you know, if you could be a little respectful and not wear any low-cut tops, you know, we're in a religious community. It's not like, they understand that. They're not in their own community. I'm not telling them how to dress in their own place, but they're coming into a religious community. It happens to be that one school, which will remain nameless, doesn't come to Sake anymore because the girls were really, really not dressed, and it caused, like, a problem. So like I said, with our girls, we have less issues because they're traditional or somewhat traditional, but I think that, you know, like, it was coming from me, so they already, like, know me, and they know I'm not like, preachy, so I can get away with saying, you know, come on, girls, like, just don't wear any, like, you know, low-cut tops.
And want to be respectful.
Yeah, like, generally people know, and if, again, like, there's a big difference between saying it beforehand when they're planning their wardrobe versus when they're already at your table and then you just, like, stab them, you know? Okay, another, yes?
I've told girls before, Shabbaton, like, you'll feel more comfortable.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. By the way,
I'm proud that dress is like,
right.
That we want you to feel comfortable.
Right, you'll feel more comfortable. So. Right, another trick, by the way, is to turn your air conditioning up really, really high, okay? And then they will just get cold and put on a sweater. Then you don't have to make any speeches. Another idea, I've done that before. Right, right, blocking, right. The mechitza. That's very funny. I'll have to write that one down. Another idea is that if you have older sons, right, to have boys for Shabbos, and if you have older girls, have girls for Shabbos. You could do that depending on your community. And, you know, worst case scenario, if you're having a Shabbaton and you really feel like it's going to be an inappropriate crowd for your kids to be around, to send them to the grandparents for one Shabbos, it's not the worst thing in the world. I'm actually in that parsha right now with my oldest daughter. It's like, she's very precocious, and she's the kind of kid who, like, listens to all the adult conversations. So it's like, seriously, I actually want to talk to someone about that. But it's like, you know, my other kids, everything just goes over their heads. She's like, boyfriends this, that. She listens to everything. And I'm like, I feel like I need to send her out next Shabbaton because it's just, like, not good for her. Anyway, number four, women don't learn Talmud because their brains are not wired that way. I've heard this. Okay, I'm not making this up. This cat sounds condescending and sexist. Rather, I usually make a joke that when my husband brings home, like, you know, tells me what he was learning that day, and, you know, in Kollel, that he says, like, you know, this whole pilpul of the cow sat on someone's flowers, and who owes it? And I'm like, honey, give me lemaisa. I want to know practically what I do in Shabbos. Like, I don't care about this. So I make a joke, and it's cute and whatever, but the bottom line is, and I tell them there's nothing wrong with a woman learning Gemara if that's, like, what she wants to do. But I really focus on the fact that, instead of looking, you know, that there's a tendency in the secular world, I know because I was there, to look at what the men are doing and to want to prove your equality as a woman by having access to what they're doing. So that goes for leaning from the Torah and being a rabbi and learning Gemara and, like, counting in a minion and all of these things, and I have classes on all of this. But it's a wrong premise, and it's really, unfortunately, the feminist movement did a big disservice to women because it accepted that premise that, like, let's copy what the men are doing, and that means we're equal. And that really devalues what a woman brings to the table, our unique gifts and what we're strong at and how Hashem wants us to perfect the world, not doing what the men are doing. So I tell them that, you know, obviously if Hashem wanted us to do that, so he would have only created one gender. Right, obviously, since he created two such different genders, so we have different things to do to perfect the world, and we have to focus on what we're meant to be doing. You can mention Buria if you want to. You know, that blows open their stereotypes. Devorah, obviously, is my namesake. You know, she was a judge and a prophetess, and people used to come to her. You can talk about that if you want. It blows open their stereotypes. But basically, you know, just to get them to stop looking at what the guys are doing, and I want to prove my equality by doing that. Okay, and just basically, you know, all the stuff about tefillin and leaning and minyan and all that stuff, I have tons of information about this, but basically on one foot, again, I basically try to get them to focus on what we're required to do, you know, and I tell them that, you know, if you fast on Yom Kippur when you're sick, you don't get extra credit for that. It's actually Nevera, right? So we're not supposed to be doing something that Hashem doesn't want, you know, like we have to focus on what does Hashem want us to do as women. If you want extra credit, I tell them, like, if you want to do something extra when you're already doing everything you're supposed to be doing, kol hakavod, no one's going to tell you not to, you know? Literally, no one's going to tell you not to. Rashi's granddaughters put on tefillin, okay? But they were doing everything they were supposed to be doing. And obviously, 99% of the women who come to me and say, I want to do this, this, and this, are not dressing sneas, not covering their hair, not keeping Shabbos, kosher, brachas, nothing. They just want to lean tefillin and, like, go to shul when they want to. You know, it's funny, my husband had a funny experience where he's a principal of, like, a Russian Kirov Sunday school on Sundays in New Jersey, and one of the women said, you know, my daughter's about to have bat mitzvah, and like, we want to, you know, I'm sorry, but we're not going to do bat mitzvah with you, we're going to do it at the reform place, because we want to be egalitarian, we want her to like have an whole aliyah, the whole thing. So he said, oh, it's interesting, you know. He said, you know, and she said, like, I really, you know, I want to go to shul with my husband. And he said, you know, that's fine, like, on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, of course, like, you want to go to shul with your husband, but would, you know, if your husband was going to shul at 6 in the morning every day, would you want to be going with them? And she's like, not so much. You know, so it's very, like, selective. But anyway, so basically I just try to get them to see that we have a lot of beautiful mitzvot as women that we need to focus on and really, like, look at what Hashem created for us to do. And later, you can, you know, think about the other stuff. But I really try to get them to focus on what we're meant to do as women. So the last issue is, and this is a painful one, in terms of older singles, right? When someone is single, just be so careful. They are so sensitive, right? Especially the women. It's a disaster out there. And I literally had a girl at my table tell me, this is so horrifying, that the husband of the house said to her, have you thought about freezing your eggs? I'm not lying. Okay, this girl's 33. And she was just, as you can imagine, horrified. Okay, so, you know, just be so careful about what you say to the single girls in particular. Be very sensitive and just, you know, if they want your help, they'll ask for it. You can offer your help, but just really gently, because it's such a painful issue for a lot of these girls. So that's it. I'm sure there's tons of other things, but those were the things that really glared, you know, spoke out to me. And if anyone has questions, thoughts, comments, things to add to the list, I'm happy to expand it. And I really, I'm available to, like, be a hired gun speaker wherever you want me to talk. Yeah.
I just wanted to mention what you said about, you know, unlike Islam, I just had a bad experience a couple times when I tried to reference other religions. There, again, that kind of ties back into the politics thing that you mentioned, like, I had no idea that this one woman in my group was, like, a complete pro-Muslim advocate. And, like, it's very liberal, you know, mindset. And I just,
right.
I've learned to say, like, I'm not an expert in other religions, but
right.
I do know about Judaism.
Right.
And, like, to leave, like, to resist comparing.
Right. I agree with that in terms of, like, the Quran. I certainly wouldn't be quoting the Quran. But the fact of the matter is, I think it is a true statement to say we do not believe in covering our face. You know, the face is like, what does it say, the eyes are the window to the soul, that you show your neshama through your face. We don't, right, exactly. So I would say, in contrast to Islam, that where they cover everything except their eyes, or sometimes even their eyes, right, Judaism believes that we should show our face, and that we're not supposed to wear, they wear like very, you know, it's like a sack. basically. I don't personally, look, I'm not working with the ultra-left wing of America, so, you know, maybe my tune would change. The Sephardim are like, forget it, you know. But whatever, I've definitely used that at Rutgers, you know, with secular Ashkenazim. I'm like not so, whatever, I'm not the Rebbetzin there. So I can, that's why I say I can be your hired gun, because like, I can get away with saying certain things that if I was on the ground there every day, I probably maybe wouldn't say it. And I find that when I do everything with a smile, I can get away with a lot. Yeah.
I work at a very liberal campus, and I use that all the time, but I source it. If you source it and you bring their sources, they can't challenge you. So I have sheets available if you want to talk, if you want to compare, because I use that. I think that's a very valuable comparison. That we're not supposed to cover our face because it's a reflection of who I find. I use that a lot. If any girl asks me, I have a sheet available at all times about Islam, and then
great.
They read it and they're like, oh, okay. But like, if you source, I find that if you source things, it's not you. You're not saying it. They can get angry at you if they
right.
don't get angry.
Right, you're just quoting. Something. Right, right.
Have your sources available?
Great. Okay, thank you so much.
Laura, thank you very much. The mic's not on, I don't know. Okay, I don't need the mic.
This makes it feel important. So.
Yeah, that's right, okay.
Hello, it's not working. Okay, so just a few quick instructions for tonight and tomorrow. Whoever drove here, please drive yourself home and drive yourself back here tomorrow morning, okay? That makes it very easy. We're starting tomorrow morning at 8:30. Everyone is getting driven here by their hosts, meaning your hosts will all ask, can you please drive your guests here at 8:30 in the morning? They all said yes, except it's not because these hosts are not nice, it's because they probably work, okay? So don't take it personally, okay? Adina Fishlitz and